Buenas tardes, everyone. Good evening. Let's start off with a chant. El pueblo unido jamás será vencido. El pueblo unido jamás será vencido. The people united will never be divided. The people united will never be divided. That's right. Woo! Make some noise for yourselves coming out this evening to be in community together. My name is Rocio Garcia. I use she, her pronouns, and I'm the senior organizing director with the Grassroots Collaborative and the People's Unity Platform. It is my pleasure to be your MC tonight. I'm very excited to be among my United Working family. And so I want to give you all a round of applause. And tonight, you know, as per usual, coming in together as United Working Families members and soon-to-be members, we're coming together to make sure that we're feeling the people, feeling the unity, feeling the power that is necessitated at this moment to organize and keep organizing block by block, to make sure that we have the forces to make sure that we win this budget and we win this fight, because this budget belongs to us, the people across Chicago. Is that right? And so we want to demonstrate the power of our organization. And tonight we have a set of speakers that will be sharing with us about their fight, about the fight. And we will also be gathering as members to learn more about where we are along in the budget fight. But first, before that, I want to introduce you all to Pastor Troy and his wife, Reverend Sherelle, to ground us and welcome us into their building.
Amen. Y'all look good. Amen. Good evening. I'm the Reverend Troy Venning. I'm the senior pastor here at Quinn Chapel African Methodist Episcopal Church. I'm standing here with my lovely wife, the Reverend C. Sherelle Brown Venning, First Lady. Y'all better clap for her than me. But on behalf of us and the dedicated members of leadership of this church, we pause to say welcome. Beloved, it's an honor to have you here tonight in this sacred and historic space. This place is Chicago's first African-American congregation, the last stop on the Underground Railroad in Chicago, and an integral stop during the Great Migration, and the longest continually held piece of property by African Americans in the city of Chicago. Yeah. Quinn Chapel has always been more than a church. It's been a landing place, a launching place, a liberating place for generations seeking freedom, safety, and belonging. Long before this building stood at 24th and Wabash, Quinn Chapel gathered downtown where faith met courage, and courage met community. It was there in the turbulent years around the 1850s that, as the Fugitive Slave Act threatened the freedom of those who fled north, that the people of Quinn Chapel organized the Liberty Association. There were more than 300 citizens who vowed that no man or woman or child who had escaped slavery would be taken from Chicago without resistance. From those meetings grew nightly patrols that they called vigilant societies. Ordinary men and women who walked the streets protecting freedom seekers, warning families, ensuring that slave catchers knew that they were not welcome here. Their work was both sacred and civic. They prayed with one hand and stood guard with the other. Among those early heroes was Emma J. Atkinson, one of the Big Four, women who hid and aided freedom seekers. Henry O. Wagner, who used his pen and platform for abolition. John Jones and Mary Jane Richardson Jones, who opened their homes and hearts to freedom seekers. And many unnamed brothers and sisters like you who believe that they ought to refuse to be silent in the face of injustice. Now, as we sit here, can you do me a favor? Can you just rub the pew, your hand across the pew that you're sitting on? It's been said that the oils of our ancestors are on these pews. Yes, yes. That you never know who was sitting where you're sitting at right now. And beloved, that oil, that memory and presence brings us to the spirit of Sankofa. There's a West African teaching that urges us to reclaim what the past offers so that we can walk into the future with clarity and courage. The Sankofa bird looks back while its feet are facing forward because it understands that we cannot move forward with power unless we first reach back with purpose. And tonight, the work happening in this room is Sankofa in motion. What our ancestors did in the 1850s, gathering in the church, organizing from the ground up, protecting families, resisting unjust laws, is exactly what we're doing here. That this meeting echoes the gatherings held in black churches across the South during Reconstruction, across Chicago during the Great Migration, and in every generation when our people organized for justice, dignity, and safety. This gathering, beloved, is Sankofa. We have reached back to pull forward our ancestors' courage. And with that strength, we step forward to protect families, to advocate justice, and insist that this city honor the dignity and humanity of all of its residents. Your organization, United Working Families, stands in that same lineage, lifting communities, building power, demanding equity, and ensuring that government serves human dignity, not special interests. So tonight, we embody that what our ancestors practiced, faith in action. We come together to defend the vulnerable, to lift the weary, to challenge systems that harm everyday people, and to build those that heal. And beloved, the prophet Micah said, we ought to do justice, love mercy, and walk humbly with our God. That's what they did in 1850, and that's what we must do again in 2025. And beloved, here it is. That God will bless this meeting, this movement, and every hand and heart committed to protecting families and building a city rooted in love, mercy, and justice. Thank you. And again, welcome to Quinn Chapel.
That really was beautiful. It's such an honor to be in this space and sit on these pews, be surrounded by so much history here. I'd like to now introduce Brianna Champion, a UWF ally, organizer with the Chicago Black Voter Project, and welcome also Ishan Daya, a UWF member in the 33rd Ward, organizer with the Institute for the Public Good, and facilitator of the Public Health and Safety Coalition. Welcome.
Hello, everyone. Again, my name is Brianna. I use she and they pronouns, and I am an organizer with the Chicago Black Voter Project. I am so honored and proud to be here at a site that has been a place of resistance and love and care for almost two centuries, and continuing on that tradition with United Working Families as we are here to talk about the Protect Chicago budget. Who here has heard about the big ugly bill? Boo, right? In that bill, billionaires made out like bandits. This bill represents the largest transfer of wealth our country has seen yet. While they got tax breaks, we got tax. Not only did ICE and the Chicago Border Patrol get $170 million. I'm sorry, billion. Whew! But the big ugly bill is funding Trump's attacks on Chicago. It's both corporal and economic, cutting our most essential services. How many people here have seen their SNAP go away? Or how many people here depend on Medicaid and see their health care impacted? How many people depend on the American Affordable Care Act for their health care and has seen their prices double, triple in the last few months? It's egregious, and our tax dollars are paying for it all. Alphabet, for example, aka also known as Google, made $100 billion last year and got a $16 billion tip from those Trump cuts. Shame. The Protect Chicago budget is proposing Google contribute just 0.003% of that tip, of that tax break to our city for community safety. Think about that. Google made $100 billion last year, got $16 billion on top of that, and we're not even asking for a full percentage to contribute to our city's safety. Not even a tenth of a percentage. Not even a hundredth of a percentage. A thousand of a percentage is what this budget is asking for. Instead of investing in the health of our communities, these corporations would rather lobby our older people to raise our property taxes, increase our garbage taxes. They want our grocery taxes to go up, knowing we just lost money from stamp, knowing that the federal government is trying to choke our communities out via our pockets. And that's what we're here to talk about. Why this budget is so important now. This budget proposes that we balance the unjust impacts of the big ugly bill has on our communities by lessening the burden on us everyday people. Via our city budget, we can equitably decide where our money comes from and who it benefits. The community safety surcharge, for example, it taxes our city's wealthiest corporations, who just got wealthier, to sustain public safety beyond policing. The smart tax asks that social media companies, who already contribute negatively to young people's mental health, do a positive, contribute tax dollars to treatment, not trauma. The smart tax asks that social media companies who impact our young people's mental health negatively do something positive by contributing to their mental health via treatment, not trauma. We can further invest in our young people and honestly all of us by returning money from the TIF surplus to our schools, our parks, our libraries. A predominantly black school in the 17th Ward, for example, is set to lose $700,000 alone. That ward is set to lose $12.5 million if we don't support this budget. Imagine what the rest of our communities will lose. That's 8,800 Chicago Public School community members who will lose their jobs. Seven at your school. Think about how that destabilizes our community and our families. Police have already complained about responding to 911 calls well outside of their expertise. This budget remedies that. Money from jobs they haven't been able to fill is going to proven public health and safety solutions. There is a cap on overtime, and this budget does all of this while ensuring that no one gets laid off. That's a pretty big deal. I would like to invite Ishan to come talk about what's at stake and why this matters to us.
Y'all, can we give it up for Bree for one more time? Brianna, that was amazing. And it always takes such a skill to be able to break down things that have purposefully for years been made to sound so complex to us, right? The reason that this budget always sounds like it's a thing that we shouldn't be able to understand is because elected officials and past administrations for decades have made it such that it actually does not communicate to us, right? And that is what's different about what's happening right now. We have leaders like Brianna and folks at Chicago Black Voter Project. We've got leaders here from UWF. We've got folks all across the city that have knocked over 100,000 doors this past summer. 100,000 doors this past summer, right? Many of y'all, raise your hand if you knocked a door or if you made a phone call to a neighbor saying, hey, y'all, we have a choice right now. This is incredible. We have a choice right now. And that choice is in front of us because of decades of work that y'all have done, that our loved ones have done, that some folks that are not here with us today have done. And those folks, you know, I'm looking at the pastor here, and he has a sweater that says Hope Dealer. right? That's what everyone here has been this past summer. That is what our loved ones have been over the last decades. They've been dealing hope, and they've been saying that together, when we build power, we will win things. And that's where we are today, right? We've built power year over year, and the choice is in front of us today. And that choice is, do we continue to do what administrations for the last decades have done and balance this budget on the backs of working people? No, that's right. And instead, what are we going to do? We're going to ask corporations, those large corporations that have gotten hundreds of billions of dollars over the last years from the Trump cuts, those corporations that have continued to profit off of ICE terrorizing our neighborhoods, we are asking those large corporations to say, pitch in a little bit, right? Pitch in just a little bit to fund community safety on our streets. Because this society, us funding the public good, is not optional when we're in a society. It is a requirement, right? We have each other's backs, and it's time that large corporations share in that burden as well. So that is the question that's in front of us today, and that is what all of us are here fighting for. So you'll see a couple things here to my sides. There's a red poster there. There's a red poster here. These posters are putting data behind the things that we all know and believe in our hearts, right? These posters are saying that we cannot continue to increase grocery fees, we cannot continue to increase property taxes, but what we can do and what we must do is have large corporations pay their fair share, right? What we're saying, right, we talked to hundreds of neighbors, and what we saw was 90% of Black and Latino neighbors, voters, say we should raise taxes on large corporations, not cut education funding. Tell me if you'd rather tax large corporations than cut education funding. That's right. Right? What we have in front of us is a choice, and no matter what you see, you're going to get text messages, and we're going to talk about that in a second. You're going to get text messages, you're going to get Facebook ads, you're going to get Instagram ads from people who have been attempting to lobby on behalf of these corporations. And what they're going to tell you is, we can't afford to tax corporations. They don't have enough money to tax corporations. But what we're going to say is, I'm sorry, McDonald's made $8 billion in profit last year. You're telling me McDonald's can't give a little bit of that to the benefit of our society? Google made $100 billion last year, and they can't give a little bit of that to the benefit of society? But what I will say is that my parents have had to make the decision of, if that extra $20 goes towards buying their son albuterol, or if that extra $20 goes towards buying their son a meal. That is not a decision that we should be having our neighbors making. Right? And that is what this budget does. Right? When we asked specifically about this head tax, right, there is a large corporation tax, and that tax is saying for corporations that have more than 100 people that are working here in the city, more than $10 million of payroll, can you give a half of a cent of each of those dollars? A half of a cent of each of those jobs into funding violence prevention, into funding mental health services, things that we know make our streets safer, that also engage our economy, right? So that's what we're saying here. We're saying that the things that we need are common sense, and it's time for everyone to get around common sense. So when we talk about who are the folks that are fighting against this, because there are decades and decades of power that we've uprooted, that are clawing back power. They're trying to say, how do we get back on the fifth floor? How do we get back in those city council seats? How do we make sure that our poor and working families continue to be poor and working while corporations continue to profit, right? So we've got folks that are aligned all across the board here. Raise your hand if you've heard of One Future Illinois. Yeah, boo, boo. One Future Illinois is run by Rahm Emanuel's campaign manager. Boo. That same person, can someone tell me what Rahm Emanuel did during some of his years? That's right. Say it louder. Closed 50 public schools. What else did he do? That's right. Wow. Y'all, we need to bring all this energy to city council. Because that's exactly what he did. Closed 50 public schools, took away the head tax, closed half of our public mental health centers, and abandoned our working families. Right? So those, and raised your water fees. Something that all of us, yep, 100%. And God, I love this. This is what we need. And what is happening right now is that that individual, that PAC, is working to convince as many people to side with corporations rather than working families. Right? So we need to be fighting against that. We need to be fighting against the finance sector, some of these Dem Party insiders, the charter school industry, the pro-Israel forces, all these people who are coming together to say that we need to tax individuals and working families rather than corporations. There are 27 alders, city council members, that put their name on a letter that said that they wanted to see a budget without the head tax. What they're saying is that rather than taxing large corporations, they want to tax all of us. They want to see increased grocery taxes. They want to see increased property taxes. They want to see increased garbage fees. And what we need to do is make sure that they know that they're listening to corporate lobbyists rather than their constituents. And that if they want to continue to be in power, it's time to reverse those roles. Because the people that got them into power are the people in this room. The people that got them into power are our constituents, and those are the people that they need to be listening to. Oh, you will be getting a list. You will be getting a list. And you'll be checking it twice. So, right? So what folks are going to see is text messages that are coming out from common collective ground and from One Future Illinois. The reality is that they have the money. But what do we have? We have people, right? So when I say people, you say power. People, people, people. But people power is not enough. It is organized people that is true power, right? So what do we need to do together? We need to organize together. We need to be knocking on doors. We need to be calling our neighbors. We need to be making sure that we're showing up to those ward nights. We're showing up in the inbox and the voicemails of those alder people. So what we need to do is we need to drive constituent pressure from everyone here, and we need to make sure that every conversation we're having, we're talking to people about the fact that we have a historic choice today. And that historic choice is, do we choose corporations or do we choose people? Do we protect corporate profits or do we protect Chicagoans? And that is our choice today. So thank you, everyone. And the question I have for everyone here is, how are you going to get involved? Right? What is the work that y'all are going to do to get us to the finish line? There are three things that I want y'all to think about. The first is, can you take a half hour of your day in this next week to go to your alder's office? Can you take an extra 15 minutes and text 10 of your friends to join you? Can you call your alder? Can you join a rally with us on Friday morning? Can you join a rally with us next Thursday morning? Because we want folks to know that it is inevitable that working people will be holding power in the city. And the way that we do that is together. And then the last thing is, join a canvas, right? So I believe we have folks here broken out regionally. And what side do we have here? We got West Side. And what side do we have here in the center? South Side. And then what side do we have here on the right? Oh, we got South Side? Okay, we got a lot of South Side. This is beautiful. And y'all are going to plan together. Y'all are going to plan together on, how are we going to take action within our region? Who is our alder? How are we going to coordinate that together? And we're going to be in these breakouts for about 12 minutes. I'm going to kick that off here. So, okay, cool. Y'all find each other and start planning. Y'all, we got a little bit of time. Let's win this budget.
The next generation of freedom fighters are among us. I want to say that it is a great privilege to introduce Stacey Davis Gates, Chairwoman of United Working Families, President of the Chicago Teachers Union, and most recently, President of the Illinois Federation of Teachers.
I need somebody to renegotiate my contract. I just counted all them jobs. Somebody tell the Sun Times. Hey, you all, I'm either do one or two things. I'm going to cry or I'm going to laugh, and I might do both. So the first thing that I want to do is say what a place we stand in here in this moment, like this church, this sanctuary. And I want us to honor it. I want us to honor it because that is how I was raised. And I want us to honor it is because we get liberated because of places where Frederick Douglass stood, Ida B. Wells stood, Dr. King. This place is special. This place is special. This place carried my ancestor to freedom, right? This was a conduit for the Underground Railroad. So we stand in a very powerful place, and I want to thank Pastor Troy and Reverend Sherelle for inviting us in. Thank you. And I want to give a special shout out to Reverend Sherelle, who is the new delegate of Mollison. And I also want to acknowledge all the people in the pews. You know, we get up here and we talk at you a lot, but I want to honor your love and your commitment to this city. And then I want to honor and acknowledge my deep appreciation for how much you love people. Because the faces that I see in this room have been in this room and other rooms where we are being organized to fight for our survival and our liberation, and you have committed. Y'all are 10 toes down for that. Thank you. And give yourselves a hand. Because everything that you are trying to do is absolutely impossible. And, like, I'm going to just cut straight to it because I am exhausted. Y'all heard all those jobs. The one that they didn't tell you is that I have three beautiful black children that I am raising on the south side of Chicago in Will Hall's ward. And I'm raising them in a city and a state and a county and a world and a country that is changing rapidly. And I have to remember that everything about who I need them to be in this world is impossible. And it is even more impossible in Chicago. I have to be honest with you. We got a lot of nerve and audacity. Because they closed 50 schools at one time in this city on people who needed them. People who were attending them, people who worked in them, people who lived across the street from them. They closed them despite protest, despite knowing that they were paying people to protest for the closure of schools. We live in a city that tore down public housing as people were living in those public houses, watching it. Can you imagine watching the buildings go down in front of you, of the people that you grew up with, that you have known your entire life, knowing that yours was coming up next? What a time clock a wrecking ball is. We live in a city that privatized city services that consequently made it harder for black Chicagoans in neighborhoods like Chatham and Roseland and Austin to sustain a quality of life because you don't have a job. And those jobs, those good city jobs, those good state jobs, county jobs, school jobs, they held down whole neighborhoods and especially black people, because that was one of the benefits of our organizing during the civil rights movement, is that the government opened up doors, DEI, for black people. This is a city that kidnapped black men in this neighborhood, John Birch. See, they ain't just started kidnapping people off the streets of Chicago. When I tell you what you are asking for is impossible, I tell you because of everything that I just told you. This place don't care about people. The leadership will make excuses and blame you for wanting you, us, them, to care about us. They'll blame you for it. How else do you get 27 order people who gonna say, I'd rather for you have a higher grocery bill, a higher rent? See, y'all keep talking property taxes. Property taxes go to landlords. Higher rents go to us. So they want your rent to go up. They want your grocery bill to grow. And they are doing this at a time where Donald Trump said, you don't even need to eat. Where you don't need health care because you ain't going to be able to pay for it. See, I need to understand that what you want is impossible, because Chuck Schumer sent Dick Durbin into a room last week to give away everything. Now, look, I don't know a lot, but I know as a union leader that has led successful strikes that the only way you take your people out is if you can bring them back in. Democrats took us out and then laughed at us. It ain't right. It is not right. That's why it's easy for those 26 Democrats in city council to put their name on something that's dumb, like giving you an extra bill. See, it's the same type of spirit. You don't just get to Trump. You got to stop at Rahm Emanuel first. Because we have to make you believe that you don't deserve. See, Rahm Emanuel had people talking about close my school. I was there. See, everything that you're asking for is impossible because somehow wealth misused in this world by politicians have convinced working people and poor people that they have to preserve and protect the riches of Amazon and Jeff Bezos over their own grocery bill. At least that's what these aldermen think. But I've seen a poll. In fact, my union did a poll. And the poll said a supermajority of Chicagoans believe that ultra-wealthy corporations and billionaires can pay more. Like a supermajority. But that's hard for people to understand when you have people calling for a higher grocery bill, a higher garbage bill, right? Higher rent, because they want to protect Master and his plantation. They don't need our help. They got their wealth. Jeff Bezos is sending Katy Perry to the moon for the borderline between Earth and space. What? And people don't have food to eat. The president went to the Supreme Court so people could starve. So here's what I'm gonna tell you. Be unrelenting and unapologetic about surviving and creating the capacity for thriving. And I know we can do impossible, because instead of closing schools, the elective Board of Education is now saving schools from being closed. It was impossible in 2013, but possible in 2025. So we've done impossible. Diet High School was left for dead. And people got together and figured out how to say, not on my watch. And now this school boasts a state championship basketball team, artists in residence, and kids who want to be in that space because there are resources, because it is a sustainable community school. So impossible became possible. We have a mayor who sat in these pews when Rahm Emanuel closed 50 schools in 2013, begging our congressman at the time to keep them open, because I was sitting next to him. We have a mayor of this city who is doing leadership like no other in this moment. He is protecting people. He is supporting people. He is valuing people. He is investing in people. Yes. See, it was impossible because we had mayors that covered up murders of children. But now we have one who is saying the rich can pay for jobs for those same children in the summertime. We have a mayor who has surplused $1 billion for schools, parks, and libraries. That ain't never happened in the city of Chicago before. At one time. So while we are weary in this moment, because we cannot figure out how our neighbor could sell us out to someone who don't need our money, while we are weary in this moment, because it's just bad to see people kidnapped off the streets of this city. We also have a mayor who says, it's not okay, and every time you do it, I'm going to levy another charge. We are going to enable resistance. We are going to support resistance. And then people resist. And then he says, well, maybe it's too cold out there. I am telling you that rooms like this create the possibility. And I am going to need you to organize your workplace. You are going to have to organize your neighborhood. Because they are going to fight for this budget to be anything but progressive. Because once you protect, support, fight for people, and win, you transform the world order. Chicago is an example of love in action because of rooms like this. Donald Trump does not want that message in the world, because if that message is in the world, then he's not in the world. Not in the world of power, not in the world of privilege, and not in the world of the White House. You all fight for fairness. Call your aldermen with everyone else. You go there and you visit them, and you make them hear your need. And you connect it to their need. And you connect it back to our shared responsibility of protecting each other in this moment. We keep us safe. So I want you to understand in this moment your power. I want you to understand in this moment that we do have a fighter for us. And I want you to understand in this moment that we can win this, not just because we're right, but because 90% of Black and Latinx Chicagoans believe that the rich should pay their fair share. Yes. So I bring to the pulpit the Reverend in Chief, the man from the fifth floor, our brother, Mayor Brandon Johnson.
So you know you got a progressive pastor. Pastor Troy Vinnie, he letting them play a little bit of Stevie Wonder. Hey, Quinn Chapel. Let me just say, our ancestors are proud. What's going on, y'all? How you doing? Thank you, Stacy. I love you too. I love you too. Thank you, Stacy, for that introduction and for those incredible words and the context that you provided into all of our speakers this evening. I really am honored, Pastor Venning, to be in this space, and thank you for understanding the collective assignment of liberation. And of course, to the United Working Families for bringing us all together tonight and bringing people around the city together for our shared goals. You know, I do want to thank just this moment. Thank you all for understanding how important and critical it is to have clarity, to understand that those who we are fighting for are the least of these. And when we stand up for the least of these, we do it unto the one who is the lover of my soul. And, you know, all of you who are committed to this core message of protecting Chicago and protecting working people, that's what ultimately this budget is about. And I just, before I move too fast, I just want to slow down for a second just to help us understand the full context of the moment that we're in. It was Supreme Court Justice Brandeis who said that we can either have a democracy or we can have wealth concentrated in the hands of the few. But he said we cannot have both. And this crucial moment in our city, in our nation's history, we must ensure that our democracy continues to evolve. It's not returning back to what it was before the Trump administration assumed office. It's about making it better than what it was. And in order for us to do that, the challenge that we have is not so much about what we want and who will benefit. It's who's going to pay for it. And in this budget, those who have made an absolute killing off the backs of working people, the ultra rich, these big corporations, will finally pay their fair share in taxes to help protect our democracy. You see, in a country where those in power at the federal level operate at the behest of capital and block or pass policy to advance the interests of an oligarchy, to demand an end to that structure is revolutionary. It is no coincidence that today we gather here, Quinn Chapel, AME Church, a place where the greatest revolutionary act that this country has ever experienced found its way through these halls. At a time in which black Chicagoans lived in terror and fear that slave catchers from the South would follow them to the place that they sought refuge, it was black people that formed the Liberty Association to prevent slave catchers from seizing the people who were coming through and looking for complete refuge. The Liberty Association, which took place right here in this sacred place, is a constant reminder of how far we've come and what's possible. This chapel also served as a station in the Underground Railroad that provided a pathway to freedom. And as I said before, this church is certainly no stranger to revolution, and this church is no stranger to the fight of the moral good. It is said often that budgets are moral documents, that morality tells us how the city will chart our path for a safer and a more affordable city. And this budget is how we will protect residents from the attacks that are coming from the White House. And whether it's the attacks that are coming from the president on working people through draconian budget cuts or ISIS presence in our communities. The president of the United States of America has declared war on the city of Chicago, even at a time in which Chicago is demonstrating our power and our ability to drive violence down and to build more affordable homes. But this is not the first time that a Republican president has declared war on Chicago. It was Ronald Reagan who declared war on this city when the first black mayor of this beloved city was transferring and transforming this city. So it's a play that the extreme right in this country has constantly used. The moment liberation finds its position in executive authority, it is at that point when the threat to capital becomes real. And rather than taxing working Chicagoans, we are proposing progressive revenue streams with nominal taxes and fees in this budget that will impact our city's largest businesses who can readily afford to pay them. Here's the part that I'm just amazed by. We are asking those who have benefited from the tax breaks from Donald Trump to pay their fair share, and they have the ability to actually pay it. It would be different if we were asking them to do something that they could not afford. And these businesses profit from the greatness of our city and our talent. The talent, of course, that comes from our residents. And therefore, they should be willing to put more skin in the game and ensure our city remains prosperous and dynamic. Our struggles are interconnected. Our city's destiny is intertwined. What happens in my home neighborhood, on the west side of Chicago, the Austin community, it affects the Gold Coast. What happens in Inglewood, it certainly impacts River North. And during this budget cycle, we have made it absolutely clear. The city council has two options, you all. They can tax the rich, or they can decimate services and tax working class people. Well, my administration has made it very clear. This budget is going to protect the working people of this city, black, brown, white, Asian, from the north side to the southeast side of Chicago. Now, critics are claiming that we are punishing job creators or scaring businesses away. It's not the reality. So now you have the most pro-worker mayor in the history of Chicago, and now they're trying to accuse me of being anti-growth or anti-workers, the very people who have created the economic conditions in which we're living through right now that have caused the greatest loss of black workers we've seen in a generation. And so that's why I want to just set the record straight here. So number one, the progressive revenue streams that we are proposing are affordable, particularly in a time when the president has given corporations huge tax breaks. Mm-hmm. Not only did the corporate tax rate drop from 35% to 21% under Donald Trump, he initiated the largest upward transfer of wealth from working class people to the billionaire class in American history. At the same time, gutting SNAP and Medicaid and the fundamental service programs that working Chicagoans would rely upon, withholding crucial funding from community safety and infrastructure and our education priorities. The fact that he is defunding every single entity of government that we fought for post the Civil War is evident that the extreme right in this country have not accepted the results of the Civil War. And they are desperately trying to relitigate a war that they lost. And the war on poor people it's an abomination. I remember a time when presidents declared war on poverty. And now we have a president that is declaring war on poor people. And given all of this, it doesn't make sense to put another burden on working people with an increased property, garbage, or grocery tax that some on city council are calling for. So you have members of the city council that are calling for increasing taxes on working people. So you have city council members that are defending billionaires and millionaires. What kind of sick and demented society we live in when you have politicians who are more afraid of billionaires and these large corporate interests than they are afraid of losing working people in this city. Number two. And I only have 2 points, Pastor, today. I just want you to know I'm not doing three. No, I do want to take my time, but I want to make sure these folks can get home and call their aldermen. Taxing these large businesses will not harm job creation. Study after study has disproved this claim. In fact, the real job killer is crime, violence, trauma, and the effects of systemic racism in our communities.
That's right.
And with the proposed community safety fund in this budget, our city's largest businesses can invest in our collective effort to build safer communities. And they do it at the same price of essentially buying their employees lunch once a month. It is pro-business to continue our path to building safe and affordable communities where residents and young people can thrive in safe streets and well-resourced schools and access housing, mental health care, and employment opportunities. Our city is making real progress that we must protect with sustained investment in our people and communities throughout this budget. Chicago experienced the safest summer since 1965 with the fewest amount of homicides we've seen in a generation. While at the same time, we've seen economic vibrancy continue to take place in our city. This past summer, our airports and our hotels experienced unprecedented levels of activity, where we had the single largest, most beneficial summer in our city's history, with 3.5 million people coming downtown, over $900 million of new revenue, $20.6 billion impacting the entire region for tourism. So it turns out you can elect a working class man who is raising his family on the west side of Chicago and have economic vibrancy and drive violence down in our city. Our movement is proof positive that progressive leadership can govern and govern effectively. And so now is not the time to cut services and programs which are uplifting Chicagoans, hiring 31,119 young people for summer jobs, the largest amount of paid summer jobs in the history of Chicago. Now is not the time to divest in our people and our neighborhoods, where we have reopened 3 mental health clinics, expanding mental and behavioral health care services all over the city of Chicago. This is the time for those with means and those of us who love this city. They have to help protect working people. You all, we have had town halls all across the city of Chicago since I released my budget plan, from the north side, northwest side, to Lakeside, to the south side. And here's what I've heard. People have stopped me over and over and over again. And you know what they say to me every time? We hear a resounding chorus of people across this city that are saying, Mayor Johnson, we are with you. It's time to tax the rich. And what can we do to make that possible? And so in closing, even in moments when the papers of record pen editorial after editorial and publish letter after letter saying that this budget will force the sky to fall, know that everyday working people across our city believe and know that the sky is not the limit. In fact, we believe that we can go beyond the sky, and we have not reached our limit yet. Our movement is still alive and well. This budget seeks to tell a story of abundance. There's more than enough for everyone, an abundance that can be realized if we dare to dream, if we dare to believe in the revolution that our ancestors discovered and found right here in this great city, if we dare to fight and realize that all things that we have been told that's impossible, it's actually possible. If we stand up against these powerful forces that want to maintain the status quo to protect the ultra wealthy, as well as this tyrant in the White House, we have to make sure that we won't, and I just want to make this emphatically clear, we will not bend, we will not break, we will not cower, we will commit to our values to pass a budget that works for everyone. We, the people, hold the power. We will always hold the power. Decades of organizing that has led to this budget has put forth a true testament of what it means to build power across all sectors. And as long as we continue to fight and remain dogged in our commitment to ensure that the revenues and the investments in this budget protect those who need it the most, not only can we win, we will win. God bless you all. God bless the greatest, freakish city in the world, the city of Chicago. Now play my theme music.